Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast-growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm your host, Eric Quanstrom, CMO at Cyence. Today's episode, really fun one for me. And we had a great discussion with Ariane Hatfield. And Ariane has quite a lot of experience in the sales development field, started the big company route, first role as an inside sales rep at SAP, worked her way to a more senior role at ChargePoint, then was a SDR leader over at Sendoso, and finally, or most recently, SDR leader at LucidWorks. So really like tech footprint, if you will, and leading teams of various sizes there. This discussion, we get into it around all things current in the SDR world. So AI, and we talk a lot about some unique experiences that she's had with offline and gifting. But what'll really come through in this interview, and frankly, I can't wait for you to get to the conversation, is the focus on the fundamentals, the real basics that make for a successful sales development practice, because she's mastered them. And I think you'll find her insights to be invaluable, as well as things that, frankly, you can go ahead and steal and put into practice at your own organization immediately, if not sooner. So at any rate, without further ado, here is my conversation with Ariane. Enjoy. And we're back with Ariane Hatfield. Ariane, so glad to have you with us. You've had quite a career thus far in kind of the sales development space, starting as an SDR, moving your way up through SDR management, till your last role with LucidWorks as manager of global sales development. And so ultimately, I think that you're the perfect person to jump into and start talking about start of the year 2024, where are we at with sales development, like in the modern world?
Yeah. First of all, Eric, thank you so much for having me. It's a total honor. I'm excited. I'm pumped to be here today. So thank you for that. Listen, I think that 2024 has been a hell of a year, right? When it comes to changing the game, we've seen a lot of that just through generative AI, the new tech stack, the new tech tools that are there to support not just content creators and marketing, but really our frontline. So I think that we're entering an era where it becomes crucial for everybody within an organization to understand the power behind these tools so they can scale them, not just when they're creating go-to-market strategies, but when they're taking that out to market, right? So inside sales development, account executives, we all have to become very smart in order to use the power behind these tools so we can be successful.
And what did you start to see with kind of like the generative AI tipping point? ChatGPT for most of the world was a big aha moment, I think. And the numbers don't lie, right? Like their site went from 0 to 600 million unique visitors in like a 2-month span. And everyone and their mother was trying to figure out how do we leverage these tools going forward? We're now a year in, and I think that a lot of SDR teams have adopted.
Yeah.
What's the kind of read on starting to adopt those tools in, again, the sales development space?
Yeah. So something that I found super interesting was the caliber of SDR made the caliber of ChatGPT successful, right? Mm-hmm. So to the SDRs out there, and I'm talking the ones that, you know, this might be their first role and they're just really, they have a strong appetite to dive into the tech space. They have this innate ability to dig and dig deeper to find the answer in a way. And so when I say a way to get to the customer, a way to find their answer, a way to get it to the next level. So for the front line who is already really scrappy, those folks really adopted ChatGPT in such a seamless way. It was almost like, great, now I don't have to use 3 or 4 different windows just to find an account-based strategy when targeting this account. So it boils down to who's driving ChatGPT. Mm. ability to channel their needs. So if you don't know why you're using ChatGPT, you're going to go down a rabbit hole and waste time. If you're understanding the purpose behind your account research while using ChatGPT, man, it is powerful. Man, it's powerful.
Do you think account research is like the biggest aha moment or bang for the buck when leveraging generative AI?
Yeah, at least for the teams that I'm overseeing, right? So if you don't have an account strategy when you're preparing to penetrate, certainly enterprise accounts, just don't touch the account. You're wasting your time. Don't do it. If you have an account strategy and you're really committed to understanding the problem that your company can solve for a really big logo over $1 billion, that's when it becomes powerful. So yeah, I think that for us on the front line, it's understanding the accounts, but also your personas. ChatGPT is almost like just your best friend in your day-to-day prospecting world. It's your assistant. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I often tell SDRs that their job is impossible because they've never done the job of the person they're reaching out to. And yet I always like to back end that with, but you have the unfair advantage of talking to more of those same titles on a daily, weekly, monthly basis than any of those titles do on their own.
Yeah. And here's the thing, Eric, at the end of the day, I think, and I'm sure this will resonate with a lot of folks who are executives, right? Like true leaders. People like to talk about their roles and how they bring value to a company, right? So the idea of entering an account and driving conversations with an executive at an enterprise level is not just account-based research, but it's really driving with curiosity and active listening skills. So if you can be curious and be interested genuinely in the person on the other side of the phone, in a phone, because it's easy to ignore an email, that's when you start to build that relationship. You understand the account, you care, and you think that you can help the folks on the other side of the phone solve a problem that's relevant to their job.
And the other thing that I heard in there that is really a nugget of gold for anyone listening is, you didn't actually say this, but you focused on the sequencing, is it's all about them. It's all about them and getting them talking again about, you said people like to talk about their roles and the difference that they're making and the impact that they're having. And I find that to be true of most executives who, frankly, didn't get to higher title by failing their way up.
Right.
Generally very aspirational, entrepreneurial, strategic, cunning people as a rule.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, no, it's true. And if you can understand how they've gotten there and what's going to take them to the next level, then you become a friend, you become a bit of a consultant, an outside perspective. And that's really the goal when you're thinking outside the box and trying to elevate your company to the next level.
How do you screen, teach, and or inculcate that amongst those SDRs that are like new to the game, first year out of school, who don't see this bigger picture that we're talking about right now?
Yeah. So I am a sucker for role plays and discomfort. And I don't say this in a mean way, right? Like the goal is never to put somebody on the spot and break them. The goal is always to lean into discomfort in order to learn and then do it again with less discomfort. And if we can do that, and if we can lead junior teams, seasoned teams through discomfort and growth, you have to be uncomfortable in order to grow and understand how you're going to repeat this process and master it. That's where the win is, right?
One can make a pretty fair argument that the majority of prospecting is discomfort.
Yeah, all of it.
Like that's the natural state of...
You betcha. Yeah.
I mean, if it was a pre-planned engagement, we wouldn't call it cold outreach.
And here's a really great perspective that I've found myself while being in the trenches, not just as an SDR, but as a leader, right? Like we do this together as a team. That means I get into the front lines with them, is the most uncomfortable conversations are held with people who don't hang up on you. right? Mm. So your job is easy if they hang up or they just don't answer you. Your job becomes uncomfortable and exciting.
Yeah.
Once the prospect wants to learn more or doesn't understand why you're reaching out to them and challenges you. And so yeah. That's when you actually get to develop a really incredible skill set that I believe changes not just your end of quota goal, but your entire life. If you can master that, you can run a company.
Without a doubt. I think that those challenges are growth opportunities, aren't they?
Yep. That's right. That's right.
And if we approach them with a growth mindset, then theoretically, I know I'm like putting a lot of fairy dust on top of this on what is a very hard job, but aren't those moments the ones we should be seeking out if we desire not only growth, but the success that comes with putting numbers on the board?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Greatness is never achieved by being stagnant. No, but get out of your lane, get out of your comfort zone, have those conversations, pick up the phone, make the video, send a personalized GIF, stand out, man. You got to do it.
That's a really interesting angle too, because you used to be the sales development manager at Sendoso, a company that I think is pretty well regarded in the offline and gifting space. That channel's pretty underutilized, isn't it?
All the time. And it's been around for years, right? Like snail mail. That's not a new term.
Nope.
But I'll tell you what, Sendoso really nailed their strategy when they decided to elevate logistics, manufacturing, and tech, right? They combined this amazing product that's not just logistics, but also software to help enhance and break the digital noise, the digital clutter. And that's a game changer. Look, like when I reach out to somebody that I want to leave a memorable impression on, I make sure that I do something that nobody else is doing, something that's going to matter to them.
What are some good guidelines for thinking through anyone listening to this and saying, okay, I want to leave memorable impressions upon the prospects that I'm reaching out to because they could represent huge future business to me. What are some of those guidelines or rules of the road that I should be thinking about, especially when lighting up a gifting channel?
Yeah. So just like anything else in our landscape, all things sales development, business development, I think it's about your scientifical and mathematical equation, right? So there's a little bit of a dance. There's a formula here that plays into a business perspective. So the science is going to be understanding what this company wants to do and your persona, right? And then the mathematical is how much of this can you pique interest with? And so you have to play around with the company and the actual human that you're reaching out to. If you can nail a gift or a video or a virtual e-gift and really resonate with their persona, their business, but then the person that's receiving it, you're going to stand out. It doesn't even need to be executed with perfection. It just needs to be executed with thought and relevancy.
You mentioned e-gifts in the mix, and I agree with you on thought and relevancy. How do you avoid that peculiar condition that in people's minds, and I know I feel this way as a prospect, so I can't imagine that it's that strange for others. When it comes off feeling quid pro quo, then it's not really a gift. It feels transactional at that point, which is the opposite of what I think you want if you're trying to create a memorable impression.
Yeah. Again, so you have to be thoughtful and you have to really personalize that. Otherwise, you might as well send a 100% generative AI email. That's it. Don't do it. If you're not going to do a job, big or small, do it right or not at all. And so if this is your livelihood, and if this is how you are going to help people, then make sure you don't cheapen that with, here's a $10 Starbucks coffee, and I'm going to send 15 more of these today.
Or like holding out there, what I see even more common in the space is, I'll give you this gift card, I don't know.
Oh, the bait and switch.
Whatever. If you do this for me, right? Yeah. If this, then that.
No, that, listen, you're married, right, Eric?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. A quarter century now.
Okay. I admire that, right? We'll have to do maybe another podcast on what the secret sauce is for that. But I'm newly married to my amazing partner, Marissa. And I'm going to tell you right now, if she said, Ariane, will you marry me only if XYZ? Not a chance. I'm moving out. I am moving out. I want to know that I am special, that I matter, all of it, right? And so you can't build relationships, certainly not lasting ones, off of something that is cheap. And so how do you personalize at scale? You have to do it. It's hard. You have can't personalize at scale. You have to scale your method of research and connection. And it changes with every company and with every persona that you're reaching out to.
Yeah. And you probably, if you're smart, I think probably use your KPIs and your results as an indicator of whether you've been successful at that or not.
So that is the mathematical portion of the equation, right?
Yeah.
The science behind it is really that market research. What matters? What do you need to do? How do you need to do it? And then the math behind it is, hey, what's working?
Yeah.
How is my approach doing today, this week, this month, and this quarter? Where am I getting my wins? And how do I elevate that?
And yet so often, and tell me if you've seen this in the largely tech-based companies that you've worked for or with, we try to get to scale before we've figured anything out. Don't we do that all the time, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. And have you ever tried to undo that? That's painful. Yeah.
Pain.
It's painful and it is expensive. And so I'm sure you've heard this. If not, I'm pretty sure you've said this before. I've heard it in your podcasts. You have to go slow in order to go fast, right? Yeah. And that's just the truth. There's no way of being successful if you rush into everything that you do. You can't do that.
Yeah. It's so true. And yet we always want to skip steps. We always do that. It's so crazy. And what's funny too, is I think Paul Graham might've said this, founder of Y Combinator, way back in the day, best advice that he gave startups was do things that don't scale.
Yeah, that's right.
Figuring that kind of thing out at the root level, like what will work to get you your first yes, your first appointment, your first customer, whatever, is it's truly an ingredient for scale. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it from that perspective, then you're on the right track almost always.
And it's, I agree, Eric. And now that you say this, I keep replaying, do things that don't scale, do things that don't scale. Yeah. Stand out, do something that the rest of the other 100 SDRs or companies or problems or software, do something different.
Yeah.
Be unique, be different.
So doubling back to where we started, like this arc of conversation around leveraging Gen AI, what do you think are some of those applications or ways that we can use powerful tools to stand out and be unique?
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of Lavender AI, ChatGPT, LeadIQ. I just love those tools. I think they're fantastic. About 6 months ago, I was over at LucidWorks and I entered the company hackathon and I asked one of my reps to join me in the hackathon. And we're not developing software here. So we really had to get creative on how we were going to win this hackathon. And so I thought, why don't we showcase how we use generative AI to break into to new markets and elevate our day-to-day processes? And so we had the opportunity to record a live walkthrough point of view, point of concept of ChatGPT, the plugins that there are available in ChatGPT, and LeadIQ Scribe. So ChatGPT, there's a plugin called PDF. So if you're doing account-based research and it's on a public company, you can download the 10K report and have ChatGPT simplify it, right? You take the top three bullet points that are related to plug in your solution, your value add, and how does it tie into your company, which is a game changer and a time saver. And then we also mixed in LeadIQ Scribe, which was pulling out messaging based off of one's LinkedIn profile. Mm-hmm. So here you have a 10K report that you're able to go through and digest within 15, 30 seconds, right?
Right.
If you have the top two prompts. And then you can go ahead and personalize that based off of one's LinkedIn. You can personalize your messaging based off of one's LinkedIn page. And it was really interesting to see how many people at the executive level didn't realize how powerful these tools are and how they're just at our fingertips, right?
Yeah. And the difference really shows up when you're creating the outreach deliverable, like whether those emails are just, they're cut above sitting in somebody's inbox. The phone calls are, you know, that much better, that much more relevant right from the jump, because you're talking to executives about stuff they care about.
Yeah, you're quoting part of their 10K report. And if
right
they're
back to them
talking about it, then their CEO's talking about it.
Yeah. They know it's an issue. It's a an objective at that company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you think of that as really just creating like a higher level of discourse, higher level of messaging at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think that's going to be your niche into resonating with somebody that you're trying to get a hold of. Yep. Again, it boils down to understanding who you're reaching out to. And so you're forced to do research. And if you're not doing research, then you're probably not going to have your job for very long, right? Scalability, it's true, right? 2024 yeah. means that scalability is not so much what we're looking for. It's scalability with that personalized touch for true account-based marketing. And if you're not doing that, and if you're not taking the time and the patience to understand your market, then you're replaceable. And you're replaceable with ChatGPT. So,
as opposed to being a force multiplier with ChatGPT and way more effective in your job for all the things that AI hasn't conquered yet.
That's right. That's right. And so are you going to be the human that becomes relevant using all these different tools, or are you going to be the human that's going to be replaced by the tools? The choice.
If you're to think about this in context, and you've seen multiple sides, right? At Lucid, you focused on the enterprise side of the fence and could go after 10K. I'm imagining that at Sendoso, it might've been a slightly more down market or wider aperture.
Yeah, of course.
That
of
you're
course.
Taking.
When with just an enterprise level is very different than a little bit more of a transactional deal or journey. So when you're talking about enterprise, you're thinking $250,000 deals and above. That's enterprise, really, 250 and above. Look, when it comes to Sendoso, the best and most creative things that I've seen at that company have been the rep's ability to target enterprise companies and mid SMB, mid to small size companies in a creative way. So creativity and thoughtfulness doesn't discriminate, or mid-size, it doesn't matter. It's still quality.
And it sounds like you're really focused in on the fundamentals too, which is, again, back to this old beating a dead horse, but starting with the prospect, leading with them. Interested is interesting type methodology.
I like that.
Don't credit me. Dale Carnegie said to be interesting, be interested 88 years ago in How to Win Friends and Influence People.
It's true. And I think that oftentimes we try to reinvent something and we muddy the waters, when really keeping it simple and keeping it interesting.
Yeah.
Is the way, like, there's your secret recipe. So is it really a secret, or is it just bringing yourself back to the basics, the fundamentals, the psychology behind what we do and why we're doing it?
It seems to me too that you're onto something, because you called it a secret. And I think for those on the buy side, and I count myself amongst that mix, because I've been CMO now for too many gray hairs. And when you hold a budget and you're a target, you see it all, right? In your inbox, on cold outreach, on LinkedIn, the connect and pitch model. And one of the things I can say is that most messages default to, frankly, making me feel like a number.
Yeah. And so, Eric, what happens? Okay, so let's just play a little like 30-second game here. What
sure.
happens?
Here we go, right? Role play. I love it.
Yeah, it's fun, right? Because it's this is a real scenario.
It is.
Of an incredibly successful company. And so you get prospected, period. Yep. And so what happens when you get that email or that LinkedIn message or video? How do you respond to a good one, a personalized attempt that is thoughtful and that will be memorable, versus the transactional one that's really a scale, like copy and paste scale?
Yeah.
What happens?
So one of the things that I'll say is that video is still incredibly rare on the scene. I think largely because of its unscalability or lack of scale associated mm-hmm. with it. What I would say is that I can spot a form templated message from a mile out. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm unique in that capability whatsoever. I think most, again, executives who have risen to a title that you care about to have in your buying group or as a target, learn these skills in their sleep. They're literally like really good at the small, really good at parsing through an inbox and saying, irrelevant to me, doesn't matter. Like, not worth my time. Next, boom, on we go. And so I think of this as the kind of, first of all, you got to be breaking pattern to get mm-hmm. through the noise, clutter, and even just day to day. The other observation that I would make for you and I think this is very true, is I think that most executives are terribly overscheduled.
Yes. Oh, you can't even keep up. Sometimes I don't even know how the work gets done before 5 o'clock, meaning you're in meetings all day and you're booked all day and you're putting out fires, and then 5 o'clock. And then it's almost like then you have the bandwidth to start your day.
The other dirty little secret is I don't think most executives work only an 8-hour day with a free martini lunch.
I know.
So I think that there's a lot of catch up. And when I'm talking to SDRs too, about like thinking about time windows, one of the things that I say is that a lot of times people will batch, and much like you have a call block or an email block or divide up your time, so do most of the executives you write to. So mm-hmm. maybe it's beginning of the day, maybe it's end of the day, but most people that I know with C-level titles, VP level titles, and director level titles are not like forever checking their inbox on a minute by minute basis.
No way. Not happening.
Ever. Mm-mm. And so to assume that you would be a very incorrect assumption.
And really, I think that a lot of leaders or organizations have this wrong, right? They try to prospect based off of their interpretation of one's calendar, right? Why don't we look internally, right? If as an SDR, you want to reach out to your VP of product marketing, why don't you go look at your VP of product marketing's calendar today, right? Look internal. We yes. have all of these themes titles. And so, oh, look at that.
Yeah, you're fancy.
The new AI on Zoom has this, yeah, okay. And so let's look internally and see what those calendars look like, but also what are internal folks working on? And align that and tie that into your outbound strategy. So you yes. can actually have the opportunity to understand who you're reaching out to. And so, yeah.
What you're describing too is a process that I've found, a lot of people call it customer development, but in, you know, really successful and high functioning SDR teams, there's a lot of that going on.
Yep. Yep.
And you're giving an example of how that can start internal and move external. I think it's at a very high form when it's external moving internal, and mm-hmm. we can have that information. But you had mentioned something offline too about really actioning creativity at scale. And I think of this as potentially one of those like great buckets for doing exactly that. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, no, I think I don't see it as a bucket. I see it as a non-negotiable. And so if we want to be successful in 2024, whether that's accomplishing a new career path goal for yourself, really taking your book of business to the next level, or just breaking into a new market, we don't have a choice. Scalability yeah. and transactional ways of moving are going to die, right? Therefore, we have to be creative and personalized with everything that we do. And I think that naturally we will become more sufficient doing so, but leading with the idea of scaling, it's a death wish. Can't do yeah. that.
Yeah, it's so funny because I don't know that a lot of people see it that way, especially given this idea of, oh, I can 10x edit anything and everything with AI tools.
You have the right person driving the AI tool, then I think that now you're on to a good equation. But if it's just the AI tool by itself, or you're just using one person to do the job of 10, now you're scaling a little bit too much, right? Like now you're entering that muddied area, that gray water, where it's no longer a success. It becomes, scaled mistake.
Or I'm going to slap a slightly different label on top of that. It's trying to create efficiencies where one shouldn't.
That's right. That's right.
If you were to boil down like the SDR and think of it in first principles, like every minute of every day could be spent somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And identifying where those high like value leverage point somewheres are might be the highest and best use of any SDR's time. No?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to change by the SDR, right? It's going to mm-hmm. change by the objective. Look, like my reps constantly, they used to constantly track the data on when their calls would get answered, right? What time of the day and what day of the week do they get the most replies or answered calls? And that's how they structured their day. And on a weekly basis, we would look at that heat map as a team, just to show the diversity in what works for somebody in the eastern parts of the US versus the West. And really identifying that data trend in everything that you do to set yourself up for success. It's just being honest and loyal to the process, your process.
Yeah, I love that. Loyal to the process. Because you know that putting back in that role play or putting on that role play hat for a moment, the one thing I will say is most executives, if they do have a hole in their calendar, where there are no meetings being scheduled, for me out on the West Coast in California, that's 3 to 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Daily. And they're, mm-hmm. and yet I get so few calls.
Uh-huh.
So few.
No, I know. People think, and I see this often in the newer SDRs, I'm going to do all of my calls first thing in the morning.
Right.
But that equation may not work for you. And so how could you possibly decide you're going to block your time without A/B testing what works for you in your territory? And maybe your territory where you live isn't the same as your assigned territory you work in.
Yep.
And so how, again, like understanding and utilizing process and data analysis to really set up your execution strategy personalized to your book of business.
And even asking that question, what works in this territory? Because it may not be like, first of all, I would say there's probably not a great probability of success if you're purely focused inside out and you're mm-hmm. purely doing things for what is convenient to you as mm-hmm. an SDR, mm-hmm. right? Like your example of new SDR, I'm gonna call first thing in the morning. Here we go. Like call block that's convenient to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yep. your connect rate is like sub 1% and you wonder why.
And so as leaders, it is our responsibility to catch that early. Otherwise, this junior SDR BDR is going to keep making the same mistake, right? And if the leader is not really doing their own data analysis on their team on a weekly basis, then how do you catch that? And how do you develop that junior SDR or BDR to become the best version of themselves, thus benefit you and your team at your company?
Yeah.
So again, like, this idea of intentionality behind everything that we do, from the bottom of my heart, Eric, I think that it's being loyal to this process everywhere in your life, as a parent, as a leader, as a wife, as a husband. I think that it's understanding the equation that works
yeah.
and repeating that process, right? And then pivot when you have to. But I just feel like account-based marketing everywhere in your life. What's your problem? What's your goal? And how do you get there?
I love the way you phrase that, because I think intentionality is a power-packed word. And it really, we were talking offline again about manifesting goals and things of that nature, but we get there by intentionality, don't we? Because it's never the first thing that like we try that works and works flawlessly. And we didn't have to break a sweat doing so. In fact, I would say most of life is the exact opposite.
Yep. Yep. You think you know it. You think you figured it all out. And then you take a step outside and boom, knocks you in the face.
Yeah. Or that you have to keep at it and keep evolving and keep hypothesizing and keep experimenting, or just be relentless in your pursuit, so to speak, of that intention that you have.
That is my favorite word, Eric. Being
relentless.
Why?
Yeah. I'd love to know why.
Because if you are relentless at everything that you do, it doesn't matter if you're good or bad. If you're relentless one of these times, you're going to find the recipe for success. It doesn't matter if you found it up front. It doesn't matter if you found it down the line. If you're relentless at everything that you do, you will be successful, period.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess it's a matter of choosing the kind of right things to obsess on and be relentless about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
That's a great metaphor for the SDR career or trajectory in sales. Yep. Around, because I've seen it a ton of times before, those that think that something is going to be easy, it always ends up being hard. Those mm-hmm. that expect things to be hard and are going to have to work for it and put in the time and develop usually find success, and usually faster than most people would think.
Yeah, no, I agree. If we take it back to the beginning of our conversation, the SDRs who are super hungry, typically more junior in their career, so they really have something to prove. Yes, they will fail much more, but they are hungry and relentless to figure out their equation. So throw ChatGPT in front of them, and within a fraction of a moment, they will figure out how to use the tool, versus the folks who are a little bit complacent and have always been successful. They don't have anything to prove, right? They understand this. And yeah. And so
it kind of being told what to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask this key question. Where do you come off on the nature versus nurture debate around, can being relentless be taught?
Ooh, that's a good one. Man, can being relentless be taught? No, I don't think so. I think being relentless depends on your appetite to succeed. Mm-hmm. So I have to turn that question around and say, how hungry is XYZ to become successful? If they're not that hungry, then I can't teach you to be hungry. I just can't. I think that in order to be successful, you have to be creative and you have to want it, right? Yeah. The rest we can teach. We can teach somebody about product. We can show somebody how to execute process. But if you don't have the drive or the juice in your step, and if you don't want it, then no, can't teach it.
So then you come off on maybe the most important kind of like phase of any sales development leader's lifespan is hiring. Who you let in versus who you...
Oh, and it's the hardest part.
Isn't it?
It is.
So what are some of your tips or techniques or best practices that you've used to weed out those that just aren't hungry at the time of interview?
Yeah. So again, I'm a sucker for role play. And so through my hiring process, everybody has a written assessment where they have to prospect somebody within our organization, and I choose who it is. And then they have a live role play. Yeah, it's a live role play and it's recorded. And so there's some pressure there, right? Here's somebody who's interviewing for a job and they're going to meet with my VP of marketing and we're going to do a role play qualification call. So there's some pressure, but look, at the end of the day,
real quick, do you actually pull in the folks from your...
Oh, yes. Non-negotiable.
That's a smart shoot the moon moment too, by the way. Just...
Well, and here's the thing. It's just as hard to be the person launching the role play as it is to be the person involved in the role play. So in order to role play back and forth, both parties almost have to be well-versed at both of each other's job. And so I always pull in part of the community at LucidWorks or at Sendoso. Look, like we're a team and I'm hiring somebody for a frontline and we all want this person to be the best. And so I'm calling on my people here to be part of our interview process. I think that there's different levels of interviews and I refuse to give somebody a $80,000 to $90,000 position based off of a 30-minute conversation. We're going to have multiple steps and there's going to be some work that needs to be done.
Some rigor.
That's right. Rigor.
I love it. I love it. And that role play, I love the word you used earlier is probably the right one for this scenario. And that's uncomfortability or uncomfortable, especially because as a candidate, you're definitely way in the deep end at that point. I don't work for this company, but here I am role playing. So tell me, what have you seen in running like that sort of interview process on the hustle front where you've literally been able to identify and pinpoint, say, that's the man or woman. There they are.
there's always an energy, right? So there's an energy to the person I'm interviewing, and I can usually tell within 30 seconds if this is going to be a good conversation or a good fit.
Yeah.
Even if they're not saying exactly the right, I'm not looking for you to say the right things, right? I'm actually looking to see what your personality is like, your body language, and how do you handle rejection or feedback. And sometimes I reject on purpose a strong candidate just to see how they'll pivot within our conversation if I disagree with them or if I challenge them. It's typically a sign that I really like them and I'm trying to find something that needs improvement. So I guess one thing that I've noticed is that folks who want to break into tech will do the research and will commit their time to preparing for the interview. And if they can prepare, but then also bring the energy and the personality, then the rest is smooth sailing for me. I just need you to have the want, the appetite, and the focus.
Such wise words. I love that.
I'm curious to know what on your end.
It's funny, at this company, we've hired, thousands of SDRs now. And I wish that we had as much rigor as what you're describing in each of our hiring processes. So I've seen like the good, bad, and ugly around all of it going forward.
Mm-hmm. And is there one key attribute to the prospect or to the SDR that you would say is a winning attribute that indicator that you know this is going to be a good fit?
And the leading indicator that we always over-index on and are very rarely wrong is curiosity. Mm-hmm. So when a candidate is displaying curiosity, what comes with that are a lot of the skills that you highlighted around hunger and want to, and that relentless, in a sense, like curiosity is a substitute for a relentless pursuit of information or pursuit of knowledge in life. And if you don't have it, then it's extremely hard and challenged to, again, inject it into people. That said, I do have a slight kind of like caveat, and maybe this is a podcast for another day, around creating the conditions in which one's curiosity or relentlessness could be awakened.
I love that. Fostering an environment of curiosity.
Yeah. Because I do think that the structure that you operate within matters to a certain degree. So I guess I come out on the nature-nurture debate a little bit closer to the nurture side maybe than it sounded like you are, but we could debate that for a while. Have fun doing it.
That's right up my alley. I would love to be a part or be notified when that podcast comes out because I'm all ears.
All right. Maybe we'll start doing some roundtable podcasts. I want to do that in the near future. So
that would be fun.
Arianne, this has been quite a lovely, fun, enlightening for me conversation. For anyone in our listening audience that may want to continue it forward with you, where should they go?
Yeah. So listen, I'm probably the easiest person to get a hold of. Hit me up on my email address. So hopefully you can prospect me, but really LinkedIn is where I live and what I do most of my days. I'm always looking at my DMs, but looking at what's happening, who's doing what. And so LinkedIn's where I'm at. I'm also located in Metropolitan Phoenix area. So if you're in the area, I'm always open to meeting and expanding my network. That's it. Also ariannecraig12@gmail.com.
I can vouch for this. You may be one of the most responsive people that I have ever sought out as a guest on this show. And so for that, I thank you. And thank you again for your time. This has been wonderful.
Fantastic. It's been delightful speaking with you today, Eric. I really appreciate it.